Hello, and welcome to the Off Kilter Quilt. My name is Frances. I'll be your hostess. Hello, and welcome to episode 168. I'm pretty sure the Frances is back episode. I did not mean to be gone. I really didn't, and I've gotten some lovely emails and messages of concern, and I've been fine. It's not anything other than just sort of one kind of busyness, the vacation thing. We went to Ocracoke Island. I think it was June 21st is when we left, a Sunday, and we went for a week. And you know, but the vacation thing takes 3 weeks. There's the week before, getting ready. There's the week of vacation, and then there's the week afterwards, where you are recovering and unpacking and doing laundry and et cetera, et cetera. So that takes up a lot of time. We had a good vacation. You know, last year in some way was kind of magical, and I knew it couldn't be magical 2 years in a row. So this year was not magical, but it was really still very nice. It was beautiful. We got there before the sharks started eating people, which is always nice. I didn't worry about sharks. There had been shark attacks in other North Carolina beaches in the weeks prior, and I think the man was a little concerned. The man saw Jaws at an impressionable age, and there was reason to be concerned because this is unprecedented, this number of shark attacks in fairly shallow waters. But we were lucky and had no shark activity, or at least, I mean, there's always sharks, so there was shark activity, but no one was bitten. And then the week after our vacation, a 68-year-old man was bitten fairly badly right about where we like to hang out in the water. So the man started sending away for brochures to lake vacations up in the mountains, which actually I would love to do, although the boys are already like, no, we have to go to the beach. We'll see. We'll see. Anyway, so that has actually been a big chunk of my summer. You know, we got back, and I've started on a big decluttering project. Now, a long-running joke among those who know me well, and I'm sure I've brought this up here, is the state of my attic and the fact I'm always doing this big attic decluttering project. And actually, I will say that I've made, over the years, made progress. And I think we're actually really close to, we're at the tipping point. I really believe that in my deep, true heart of hearts. Today it's going to be 100 degrees, and that's probably means not doing a lot of attic work, but I'm doing a lot of work downstairs. And in fact, last week I did something very important. I really cleaned out. I did a deep clean of my sewing area, and it just had gotten, everything had gotten cluttered. The walls had gotten cluttered with just stuff I just taped up there, and you know, my scrap boxes had gotten cluttered. Everything had gotten cluttered. So I did a very serious decluttering. I have a bunch of fabric scraps, like good size fabric scraps that I'm going to recycle. And I have a lot of smaller scraps that I'm just throwing away. You know, we are, as a family, very good about recycling and free cycling and composting. And I feel like I've earned a little space in the landfill. And sometimes when you're doing the big declutter, and I mean, we're really trying to do a big declutter of the house as though we were moving. That's the thing. We've lived in this house 8 years now. And it's not like during those 8 years we've not given anything to Goodwill or thrown anything away. We have. But when you move, you actually go really deep. And because you have to deal with everything in the house. And that's what I'm pretending that we're doing. And we've made some good progress. We painted Will's old bedroom. Will has a suite upstairs. The room that he claimed as his bedroom for many, many years shares a wall with our poorly insulated walk-in attic. And so in the summers, it would get very hot, and he was having trouble sleeping. So last year, we moved his bed into my study, which I don't use very much, except as more of a library. You know, store papers and books. And I have a desk in there and a chair in there, but really I was working more downstairs. So we gave him that room. And then his old bedroom became kind of a hangout. We left his, but he has a big IKEA table for a desk. And so we left other things in his old room. But lately I've been thinking, you know, he's not using his old room that much. he's really using this new room. And, you know, I think it would be nice to have, one, a bed in Will's old room, because sometimes the man snores, and it would be nice just to go get in another bed and sleep instead of having to go downstairs to find a couch. And so I got the idea of putting a, you know, clearing out Will's old room. By the way, walls painted orange, but totally covered up with sports posters. Clearing out that room and making it kind of a guest room. Leaving Will's IKEA table in there. So if he wanted to do homework and wanted to use the room, he certainly could. But just kind of make it a more grown-up room, a more sophisticated room, and a room that I could sleep in, guests could sleep in, etc. So, to that end, we have painted the room a very pretty dove gray, took down all those sports posters, and I really, you know, Will and I talked about it, and he was fine with that, I think. But what's interesting is that once we started talking about making these changes, he's been very involved in the process. He helped pick the color, it's very a light gray, a dove gray, it's very pretty, and he actually has been using the room. We have not gotten, what we're going to get is a futon couch, I think, actually a futon love seat. And that will be plenty fine for bed when you pull it out. And I don't know. And we've got Will's table in there and also sort of an old desk we had in our mountain house that we really like. And I think we're going to put a small rug in there, put on new curtains. But those things have yet to happen. But still, the room already looks, it looks very nice. And Will has been using it because he likes... if you clean up his room, he really enjoys his room. Anyway, so that was a big job. And in fact, we're still, Jack is at camp, so we've been using his room to pile all Will's old stuff in, and now I'm in the process of either putting Will's books. When we took all Will's stuff out to paint the room, we've been going through it and going through it and going through it, and have gotten rid of a lot of his stuff. So that's good. Anyway, that's been a huge project, and it will continue to be a huge project for the rest of the summer. And I'm really hopeful that we're... I mean, it feels different. The house feels better already, although, you know, if you've done a big decluttering project, it's always a two-step forward, one-step back thing. So there's always a part of the house that's got a lot of clutter and a lot of things, boxes and stuff you're going through, but there are other parts of the house that are very nice. And my sewing room, my sewing area, if you have listened to this podcast for any length of time, you know I have claimed the front of the house, the front L, which would typically be a living room, dining room set up. We only dine in the dining room on holidays. So typically that is where I lay out my cutting mat. And my when I'm quilting, actually machine quilting a quilt, I work on the dining room table. To have all that space for the quilt to lie upon. But in the short line of the L, that's where I have, well, now I have my treadmill desk and a tip and a drop leaf table where I have with one end up, one, what do you call it, leaf up. And that's where I typically sew. It feels very, very nice to have that all cleaned out. It really, I mean, it just, it's not just a, it's a psychological thing. I think it's a spiritual thing. I really do. So I am motivated to continue with this project. That means I'm not getting much writing done and not a whole lot of quilting done. But I do have quilty things to talk about. So first thing, I wanted to update you on my adventures with the American Quilting Society Publishing Wing. If you've been following along with our story, you know that in March, I sent... a book proposal. Actually, they asked for a series proposal, and I sent a series proposal, which I worked very hard on. And in April, I heard back. I got a letter from the publications director saying that they wanted to publish the first book of the series. Now, I was a little concerned from the start because they had the name wrong of the book. The series is tentatively titled The Better Late Than Never Quilting Bee. And the letter referred to it several times as The Badder Late Than Never Quilting Bee. And the fact is that is the series title, not the book title, which was Friendship Album 1933. But I thought, well, you know, it was clearly a boilerplate letter. Someone just made a typo, and they didn't realize that that was the series title and not the book title, etc., etc. But I still was interested and enthusiastic, and the following week, I got the letter on a Saturday. The following Monday, I called, as the letter instructed me to do, and left a message and heard nothing. So I waited, and the following week, I emailed and heard nothing, and called again. And anyway, the whole saga, spent about 6 weeks trying to get in touch with the director of publications and never heard anything. Emailed one of her colleagues who actually did reply, and forwarded my email to someone else who didn't reply, etc., etc. So I gave up. Just decided, one, even if I, well, you know, one, I didn't know whether or not I wanted to publish with AQS because I didn't know the terms of publication. So it was certainly not a done deal. And by the time we were 6 weeks into having no replies, no response, I just felt like, I can't work like this. I need to work with professionals, and this is not being handled very professionally. So I gave up and continued to work on the manuscript, but I just felt like the AQS deal was over. Got back from vacation, got our mail back, you know, had to hold on the mail, got the big pile of mail, and in there was a big envelope. And guess what? It was from AQS with a contract in it. So this is late June, after not hearing anything for several months. And the cover letter said, as we've discussed, here are the terms of the contract. And we've not discussed anything because we've not spoken. And I'm reading over the contract, the terms were absolutely unacceptable. The basic terms were not, which is they published the book. They don't edit it. That's okay, because I can edit and the man can edit. But they do the printing and the marketing, etc., etc. No editing. I don't think they copy edit. It comes out in paperback, and the author gets 5% of every paperback sold, which is fairly typical. I get a little bit more from Simon & Schuster, but that's a different deal. So no advance, which is so they don't give you any money up front against future sales. They just put your book on the market, and for, you know, every copy sold, you get 5%, which, again, typical for paperbacks. But they want 50% of all ebook rights, which is ridiculous since they put nothing into the book, other than that they would make money off of printing it, of course, but 50% on ebook is ridiculous when they've done nothing. I can put it online, right? So that's unacceptable and egregious, and that's becoming a big thing in with authors, with writers anyway, because a lot of publishing houses have pretty egregious terms when it comes to ebooks. And then finally, they wanted rights of first refusal on any quilt book I ever wrote, ever, for the rest of my life. And rights of the first refusal just means any quilt manuscript I write, any quilt story, I would have to first submit it to them. And then if they didn't want to publish it, then I could submit it to other publishing houses. But they would always get the first look. And I'm not going to do that. I just wouldn't. And this is all on top of the fact that the, you know, just the total lack of professionalism. You know, it's kind of what I suspect is it's just amateur hour. This is not, in a way, real publishing. So I need to write them. It would be tempting to just rip everything up and say that's done, except for the fact that she wrote as we discussed. And so I need to put in the public record, we have had no discussion, because I could see not signing the contract, not returning the contract, not contacting them at all in January, which is when they want the novel. They want a draft of the novel in January of 2016. When I did not submit a novel, I could see I can anticipate them sending letters and calling, where is that draft, even though we were not contracted, and so although I suspect that the publications director wrote as we discussed, it's either boilerplate or she's covering her butt. But it also could imply that we have a verbal contract, which we don't. And I certainly have piles of evidence on my side that I tried, including what I've said on this podcast over and over. I've been trying to reach them and they've never contacted me. So I have plenty if it were ever pushed, which I can't imagine that really happening. But if it did happen, I could say, yeah, no, I was never contacted. We never had a verbal agreement. Yeah. So anyway, that saga is over. I will continue to work on this novel, and either the man and I will see what doing our own publishing, little publishing house, and putting it out and seeing how that works. And if it doesn't work, I can just send it around to agents. So I have lots of options. And the fact is, you know, writing the proposal took a long time, but it was good work, and I'm glad I did it. It's good to have, for me to have, as sort of a guideline for what I might do with this book and this series of books. So that's that story. The other quilty things going on in my life. Last week, I went to New Bern, North Carolina, which is about 2.5 hours from here, to visit with Lynn Gorgeous, who you may recall contacted me after I posted something about Uncle Eli's quilting party on the American Quilt Study Group forum. And as it turns out, she had been there as well. She and a colleague she's a quilt historian, and she and a colleague are doing research on Alamance plaids. Eli Whitney, North Carolina is in Alamance County, and there used to be many, many textile mills there. And one thing they were famous for was producing plaid fabric, known as Alamance plaids. So they're doing all this research, and they were at the Uncle Eli's quilting party to actually try to connect with people who had some sort of ties to the old mills, who had parents or grandparents, or maybe even they themselves had worked in some of the textile mills up in Burlington. Anyway, I actually had seen them, but I had not talked to them at the Uncle Eli's quilting party. So she contacted me, and we emailed back and forth a little bit. She said, "Well, send me your phone number. I'm gonna give you a call." And she did. And you know, I'm not a big phone person, but she's great and very easy to talk to, and funny and down to earth. She's in her early 60s. Grew up in Eastern North Carolina, and then went off and traveled around, has traveled a great deal. And she and her husband got interested in antiques and then started an antiques business with a real focus on stuff from the Civil War, which was interesting. They developed up in Massachusetts because there are these museums up there with lots of stuff from the Union Army. So anyway, because of that business, she started studying Civil War quilts. Her husband essentially needed her to be more knowledgeable, needed someone, you know, to be knowledgeable about Civil War quilts, because they were dealing some of those. And she got really into it, has taken classes at the Smithsonian, has taken classes on weaving and dyeing, has gone out to, apparently Barbara Brackman used to have a fabric camp out in Kansas, a week-long camp to learn everything about quilt fabrics and the history of fabric and the history of quilting, etc. And she's gone, and Lynn has gone to that. So anyway, fascinating person, fascinating history. So I went down last Wednesday and met with her and spent time in her studio, and she showed me around. It was, and what she does, among other things, she does quilt restoration. Although she said sometimes she feels like the bigger part of her business is discouraging people from restoring quilts, because it can be very, very expensive, and oftentimes the quilts people want restored are actually not that valuable. So there you have it. I got to see lots of neat old quilts, and what was fun is I got to touch them. That was very exciting. You know, you never get to touch quilts, and I got to touch these quilts, and they were fabulous, and it was interesting to feel, you know, some of the fabric, these were old quilts, you know, really, you know, anywhere from Civil War era into the 1950s, and you could, you know, the feel, the touch of the fabric, what do you call that, the hand, it really varied a lot, Colors varied a lot. One of the things we were talking about was the differences between quilts made in the South and quilts made in the North. And she talked about how Southern quilters often use more solids in part. They were easier to come by. They were cheaper. And also talking about why Southern quilts, it's harder to find them. And a lot of it has to do with the weather and how they were used. Quilts were, she talked about family, she knows of her own family quilts that were used during the curing of tobacco, and that kind of will ruin a quilt. So anyway, so it was all really, really interesting. I got there about 11 and stayed until about 3:30, at which point, you know, I just got to this point where I could not take any more information in. But I learned a lot, but really seeing a lot of quilts up close, as well as hearing Lynn's story. She's a good storyteller. She's a good talker. So it just a really nice, down-to-earth, funny person. So I had a really good visit with her. I came back, had a couple days of this and that, and then on Friday, the man, Will, and I left for Washington, D.C. Now, Jack is at a camp in Atlanta. It's an academic camp. I think he's having a good time. Rumor has it that a girl asked him to a dance. So maybe he's having his first big summer romance, camp romance. I don't know. We'll find out. The man's going to go pick him up on Saturday. So it'll be nice to have. It's always weird when he's gone. Even though when he's here, he's such a quiet presence. But then he's gone. It's like, where's Jack? What's going on? So we'll be glad to have him home. But I'm really glad that he went. It just sounds like he's having a good time. Not that he tells us all that much. But anyway, so that's why he was not on this D.C. trip. And we were going up to D.C. because I was going to the Quilt Alliance Conference called Not Fade Away, which is about documenting quilts in the 21st century. And going up, I was a little apprehensive, just because, you know, I learned about this in March and signed up as soon as the registration was open and was very excited. And then the closer I got, I thought, what if it's not really that interesting? What if it's all stuff I already know? Or, you know, what if it's really clicky? What if, I don't know, whatever. What if I think I'm interested in this stuff and then as it turns out, I'm really not? Well, I'm happy to say it was fabulous. The conference itself was in Herndon, Virginia, and apparently it's there every 2 years, and it's at the United Methodist Church there on Frying Pan Road, and they always do it. I can't think of the right word, but there's an exhibit at the church every 2 years called Sacred Threads, which is a juried exhibition, and it's done by the Studio Art Quilters of America. And it was an amazing exhibit. It's art quilts, clearly. They are spiritual in theme. It's not necessarily religious, although there were some that were quite religious in their content and their theme, but others that were more about sort of a more personal spirituality. There was a section in the back of the exhibit called Grief that was incredibly moving, and there were lots of Kleenex boxes around, and I was in tears by the end of it, as everybody who saw it, I think, was. But there were also quilts that were quite joyful. There were political quilts, there were just all kinds. I took some pictures and I may post them just to give you an idea. I don't think pictures, I try not to take a lot of pictures at quilt exhibits. Sometimes it's just hard not to, because you have the camera, you have the technology, but you know, they never really give the full feel of the quilt. The photographs don't. And I almost thought about buying the book. They already had the book for this year's exhibit. But I also had, you know, it was expensive, and I just kind of felt like, well, you know, it's just not the same as seeing the quilts. So although, who knows, maybe I'll go online and buy it. If I have some desire to do that, like a week from now, then I definitely will. But it was not just a tremendous quilt exhibit, but a really tremendous art exhibit. So many of the quilts were just gorgeous. gorgeous and innovative and original and moving. They were lovely. So that was and a big the exhibit was really nicely done. But that was in the church. Huge church. Very modern, a really good space for both the exhibit and for the Quilt Alliance Conference. The first night of the Quilt Alliance Conference, there were some documentaries. The first woman who presented is actually a professional documentary maker who for a while worked at ABC and was doing very short pieces and wanted to do long form, just sort of longer docs. And so and the documentary she is working on now is about barn quilt trails. But in particular, her focus is on this woman whose name I don't have in front of me. It's Donna something, who basically is pretty responsible for getting the whole movement started. And she's quite a personality. She's very ill right now, so it's kind of a sad story. But it's a great idea. And she was only able to show us 5 minutes of the doc, in part because she hasn't finished it, but also, I guess, because she wants to submit it to film festivals. And I guess you cannot, there's some limits as to how many times or how much the film has been screened, I guess, when you submit. So she couldn't show us that much. What she showed looked really interesting. But what was really, to me, much more powerful. Well, okay, so she showed us. And then these two women, this was fabulous. They're from Maryland, but kind of western, almost in Ohio. And actually in this mountainous part of Maryland. I did not know Maryland had mountains, but apparently it does. One of the women worked for the Arts Council, in this tiny area, tiny county. It might not have been tiny, it's just I never heard of it. It's rural, let's say it's rural. It may have been actually huge, but it's a rural county in Maryland. And then the other woman worked for the agriculture department, and I think it was kind of she kept calling herself an agro geek. But they both, I think around the same time, separately, came up with this idea for a barn quilt project. And so now they have these quilt trails all through the county, and they talked about how they made it happen and showed us pictures of the barn, various barns, and how the community has been involved in it. And you know, it's about, you know, both arts tourism and agro tourism. And they were just wonderful. It was delightful. I don't know. Do you have quilt barns where you are, or barn quilts? Not quilt barns, barn quilts. And I'll put some information on the blog if you want to look up this. There are several here in North Carolina. A lot of them are up in the mountains. I know that the Heritage Quilters up in Warren County have actually put one together. So it's very cool. And it was an exciting... Yeah, it was just very fun to hear them talk. And but the final thing of the evening was, so the Quilt Alliance, their mission is to document, preserve, and share. And I occasionally will like link to one of the transcripts from their oral histories that they do, and they often do them. I'm sorry, we've got a plane. Actually, it wasn't a plane, it was a helicopter, and it's still going, and it seems like it's just going to be here forever, so I'm going to go on. All right, so let's back up. Quilt Alliance has a lot of different projects, but one is doing oral histories with quilters. And anyone can do this. You can do it. You can go on to their website, get all the guidelines, register, and then if you know someone you think would make a great interview, you could go interview them. The interviews focus on a particular quilt, so it's not a wide-ranging interview about all the quilts this quilt maker has made. You ask the quilt maker to bring a quilt to the interview, and then you talk about that quilt. And of course, you might get into the quilt maker's histories of quilt maker. You probably, in fact, will, and it seems like most of these interviews do. But you're really focusing on this particular quilt and why it's meaningful, et cetera, et cetera. There have been about 1,000 of these interviews done, The transcripts are on the Quilt Alliance's website. The recordings are with the Library of Congress. They've started doing video docs as well, and they've been doing them at quilt shows, where they just ask people who have quilts in the shows to stand by their quilt and talk about it for 3 minutes. The Quilt Alliance staff is tiny. There's the executive director there, and she actually lives in Cary. Her name is Amy, and her last name is I can't remember. It's not Meineke, it's something like that. I think it's Milne. Amy Milne. There's a part-time project director. Her name is Emma Parker. She's a delightful young woman who actually lives here in Durham. And then there's Debbie Josephs, and she's up in there. The actual office is in Asheville. Amy Milne lives in Cary, which is very close to where I live. So that's kind of exciting. So it's this very small staff. I think Emma is the one doing a lot of these video docs right now. And she came up, the Sacred Thread show, I think opened a week ago, and Emma came up and she did these 3 minute videos with some of the quilt makers who were there. And so she showed those on Friday night, and they were incredible. Particularly some of the quilts had, they're just different stories, and the stories really add this layer of meaning to the quilts. And what was interesting is one of the quilters had this quilt that I had not loved, and it was called Annie, Won't You Do a Jig? And you see, and it's the back of a woman. It's a three-dimensional quilt, and the she's dancing. You see her from the back. You see this red hair. The hair is made of some sort of yarn, and then she's also wearing a tutu, and the tutu is an actual half of a tutu, right? I didn't love it. I thought it was kind of cute, but I didn't. There was just so many tremendous quilts that were making me cry. Quilts, and this wasn't one of them. But then I watched this 3 minute doc that Emma had done with the quilt maker, and she told the story of the quilt. And everybody's crying by the end of the story. The quilt maker herself was quite delightful. She seemed this very happy-go-lucky person. But the quilt, Annie was her sister-in-law, who in September last of 2014 was diagnosed with stage 4 multiple myeloma, which is really bad. She's dying. So anyway, this quilt maker told the story she met, how she met her sister-in-law. She met her sister-in-law, Annie. When she met Annie, she's married now to Annie's brother. They've been married for 20 years. So Annie introduced her to her future husband. But apparently she's just a very lively, wonderful kind of person who would do a jig in a hospital, right? She was a nurse, I guess. And so someone had yelled at Annie, do a jig. So that's where the idea for the quilt came from. But anyway, but it was a really moving story. And I talked to several people afterwards or the next day, and a lot of people said how much they loved those 3 minute shorts, and how that one, the Annie, Why Don't You Do a Jig, which is not the exact title of it, how much the short doc had changed, had made them rethink that quilt. That people had a similar response to my initial response, was, oh, that's cute, but eh. And then once you hear the story, it became a different quilt. So I think Emma showed us six of those. They were incredible. They were incredible. So that was wonderful. Saturday, we started out with Maren Henson, or Hansen. I'm not sure which. She is a quilt historian, quilt scholar, doing a big research project now on 100 Wishes quilts, which are quilts made by people who are adopting from China. And apparently there's this whole online community. This tradition has been going on maybe for over 10 years. And it's a tradition from northern China. And I'm sure it was quilt makers who first decided, hey, this would be a great idea. The adoption process is very long. Of course, adoptions now, it's harder to adopt from China. But I think up through maybe 2005, 2006, it was much easier to do. Anyway, so somebody got the idea of doing a 100 wishes quilt, taking something from a Chinese, you know, taking a Chinese tradition as a way of welcoming, because 100 wishes quilts are a way of welcoming people into community. And so it's a great idea, and it's an idea that really spread. And so the non-quilters who are adopting children from China started making these quilts. And because, you know, as a quilt maker yourself, that the Muggles don't really know very much about fabric, about quilting, about any of it. So what happened is initially people who were making the 100 Wishes quilts were asking their friends and family members to contribute a little piece of fabric to be part of the quilt, right? This quilt that would welcome the new baby or the child from China, and they didn't even know where to get fabric. So what happened is these online communities grew, and this of course makes sense to all of us, anyone who's a twilter or who's done any kind of fabric exchange or round robin or whatever. These online communities grew where people in the communities, these families that were adopting, they started sending each other fabric and also updating each other on their progress. It took a long time to get through all the paperwork and approval, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, so Maren Hansen has been doing this research, and it was great. It was really interesting and informative. And then there was actually, she had brought with her some folks who'd been involved, including the woman who's like the director or president or something of eQuilter.com, who had adopted her now 18-year-old daughter, Sophie, from China, and had made this quilt, and it's a beautiful quilt, and she had the quilt with her, and she hung it up and was talking about it and saying, you know, that it's always hung in her office, and so when anyone's come in, say, to interview her or take pictures, that quilt's always behind her, and it's always pretty much been there, and this was the first time she really had taken it anywhere, and she had brought it up here, not just to show us, because she was giving it to Sophie, who was going to college, and this was news to Sophie, who started crying, and then everyone's crying. There's a lot of crying at this thing, but good crying, good tears. Anyway, so that was good. And then there were sessions. I took two sessions. The morning session and the afternoon session were on how to use the Quilt Alliance website, particularly how to search the Save Our Stories transcripts. And then the afternoon was how to use the Quilt Index. And I realized, although both were very good, Christine Humphrey, who is a PhD candidate at the University of Nebraska, this was interesting to me. Her master's thesis and now her PhD dissertation is on state quilt projects, which I, of course, am very, very interested in. And that reminds me, I don't know if I've told you this, because it's been so long. I'm trying to think. I may not have. Maybe I have, maybe I've not. But just in case I haven't, little quick, going off on a tangent here, as I sometimes do, and I hope I'll get back to what I was saying before. When I got the June newsletter for Durham Orange Quilt Guild, there was a notice from a woman saying, I have all these state quilt documentation project books, and I would love to give them to somebody. I'm trying to clear out space. I've retired. I'm clearing out space. I would love to give them to somebody, preferably somebody under 50. Well, I am 51, but I emailed her right away and said, I've got to be upfront with you, I'm 51, but I have a really strong interest in these kind of books. I've been collecting them, I love them. You know, sometimes I think maybe I'll write something about them, but they would certainly be used for research and blah, blah, blah. Totally understand if you want to give them to someone younger, I get that. But just in case, I'd be really happy to take them. And she emailed back and said, well, I've gotten a couple other people who are, there have been a couple other people who are interested, but it does seem like, I'll give them to you. So we met at the parking lot, the Northgate Mall. She was absolutely delightful. I imagined there'd be about 10 books. There were about 40 in beautiful condition. I think, the man and I were looking at them thinking, oh, this has got to be, $500 worth of books. And then I realized a number of these books are out of print. And one of them, the Rhode Island book, to get it used, $150. All right, so this is probably much closer to like $1,000 worth of books. These are beautiful books. So this was an amazing haul. Fortunately, this woman has grandchildren about the age of children I write for, so I sent her a big box of my books signed to all her, you know, to her various grandchildren. So she got the books and was very happy, and she said, "Oh, I think this was meant to be." So I think we both got something out of it, although I got a lot more than she did, without a doubt. In any event, very exciting to have those books, which I've just started going through. Anyway, so this young woman, Christine Humphrey, who I actually started talking to Friday night, because I saw her there and knew she was teaching the class and wanted to know if I should bring my laptop, and we started chatting. Very nice. I would say late 20s, maybe. Originally from Texas, but has been in Nebraska for a long time now, and really wants to stay there if she can find a job there. So she taught the class. So her dissertation and her thesis is online, so I started reading it. And she did a great job with the class and was very helpful. I am not an intuitive searcher. You know, when you get into a website like that, which has got tons of material, it's like, so she answered a lot of my questions. So when I went to the one, the quilt index, which was taught by a woman named Mary Worrell, who runs the quilt index, is done through Michigan State University, and it's got lots of cool stuff on it too. And it was really interesting, and it was probably useful to me more in terms of my work with NC Folk, I'm not working on it, but one of the projects is getting more and more of the stuff that we have, our archive materials, online. And so this is information I can bring to Joy, the director, and talk to her about what I learned about how the Quilt Index came to be and what they've been doing, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel like I actually learned enough in the first class, even though it was about a different index, a different site, that I didn't need the second course. And in fact, Mary did a great job, so this is nothing against her. I thought she was excellent. But I sort of wish I had taken the class on doing interviews for the Quilter Save Our Story project. But both classes were great. In between them, after lunch, there was a session on doing quilt history, researching your own quilts or quilts through genealogical records, which was interesting. And particularly, I don't know if you're familiar with, I don't know if it's Kara or Cara, I can't remember now, Hicks, but she is a writer, and she did a couple classes on self-publishing, which turns out were more about making your own books. So if you want to put out a book on your own quilts. But probably her most important work, I would say, is a book called Black Threads, which is a bibliography if you're interested in African-American quilts and quilt makers. There's just tons of information. And she was told a really, really interesting story about researching a quilt. She had discovered through other research that a black quilt maker had sent FDR a postage stamp quilt. So she wanted to see if she could find the quilt. And ultimately, I won't ruin the mystery for you, but she talked about that search and how she used records and things like that. So that's not the kind of research I'm doing. It was still kind of, as someone who's not that skilled of a researcher, any kind of talk about methodology is useful. So anyway, and it was delightful, and the different stories that people told. It was all good. So that was all good. And then there was a dinner Saturday night. Now, this is really sad. The dinner, which I think in retrospect, if I had to do it all over again, so it was a fundraising dinner. And I think maybe the tickets, I don't know, 25 or 50. So it was a fundraising dinner for the Quilt Alliance. And I thought, oh, it might be fun. And you don't know who you'll meet. And so I kind of went back and forth. And the man and I discussed it, like, which would be better to, you know, but I also knew I'd be really tired by that point. But I decided, give it a shot, and you'll know for next time whether or not to do it. But partly it was supposed to be a celebration of Meg Cox, who you might know as the author of the Quilter's I think it's the Quilter's Catalog, which is a great book of resources for quilters. She's written about quilts, and she is quite a force in the quilting world in a lot of different ways. And she has been the president of the Quilt Alliance board for some period of time, and she's about to step down, and new president is taking over. And so this was a sort of farewell celebration for her, and there was going to be, you know, toasts and video and da da da. Well, the night before, so Thursday night, her husband died, and I think he had been ill, but had not been expected to die so soon. So she was not there, and it was very sad. So anyway, so I still went to the dinner, and it was one of those things where a lot of the people there were the board members. I think most, it was actually kind of a small dinner. There might have been 30 people there, and most of them were like Quilt Alliance people. And everyone, you know, it's a quilter thing, so it's totally, everyone's totally friendly, totally nice. There was no cliquishness or snobbishness. But still, this is the board. They get together once a year. They're all like da-da-da-da and talking. And so I was a little like, oh, gosh. You know, because I was really tired. And sometimes, I'm okay walking into a room where I don't know people. But I wasn't at my sort of social best. I'd actually taken a very solid nap when I got back after the second session Saturday afternoon. And waking up, I woke up like 30 minutes before I needed to leave for the dinner. And I just thought, I don't think I can do this. But I did it. And I ended up sitting at a table with sort of other people like me who were not Quilt Alliance. This was the first time they'd been there, not Quilt Alliance board members. And we ended up having a really lovely dinner and had fun talking. And so it turned out just fine. It was sad that about Meg Cox. But it was just fine. So it was a great event, and I'm so glad I went, and I will go 2 years from now. But what's fun too is that the executive director, Amy, and the projects director, Emma, again, they both live nearby. And one of the things that Amy had talked about the first night when she gave her opening remarks was, you know, one of the things they're really trying to work on is how to share what they have. They've got all this good stuff. How do you get the word out? How do you make it accessible to people and useful to people? Well, that's something that we're talking a lot about at NC Folk. Not even necessarily for us, but for, you know, various arts groups, traditional arts groups, and people who are doing interesting stuff around the state. But all their energy, you know, they're not good at publicizing it and not good at getting it out into the world. Say, hey, we're doing this, or we've got this stuff, or we, you know, whatever. You Google some group you've heard about, they don't have a website, or the website is no longer up, or, you know, that's one of the things we've been talking about at NC Folk. How do we best help people figure out basically how to market themselves, promote themselves, get the word out? And so, you know, at the end of Friday night, as I was leaving, I went up to Amy and just said, yeah, you know, this is something we're, you know, working on at NC Folk. I think it's really a big issue for a lot of arts groups like this. And I would love to talk to you more. And Emma came over and we talked about where we lived in Durham. So anyway, we're going to get together for coffee and do some talking and see what ideas we come up with, for, again, getting the word out, saying, this stuff exists. I think one of the best things would actually be putting together a sort of a longer video documentary of the 3-minute tell your stories, where the quilters stand in front of their quilt and talk about the quilts, and this, which is something that you could show at quilt shows and festivals. I think that we love hearing these stories. And I love reading oral history, so I will go to the Quilt Alliance site and read the Save Our Stories, and just sort of obsessively. But other people aren't going to want to do that. So there may be also ways to take the transcripts and put them in a more user-friendly format so that people can just find them accessible. Anyway, so I'm excited about that. It's a good trip. Now I'm home. I'm teaching a writing workshop all week next week, in the mornings, which I'm looking forward to, but I really have to get to work on. I've got all my ideas, but I need to sit down and actually map out my plan for that. As far as quilting, I really have not worked on anything in probably 2 months. Except I started messing around. I was been working on my Dresden plates, and I just needed a break from that. And so I started working on an improvisation, and started making a flag, not an American flag, just messing around. And so I'd like to finish that up and get my Dresdens back out. Right now my workspace is cluttered up with things I need to sort through as part of the great declutter. But I'd like to get my Dresden plates back out and get back to work on those. And also, one thing we did before we left DC yesterday, we went to the Museum of Air and Space, sort of the annex, which is out in Chantilly, Virginia. It's like it's a beautiful, beautiful space. It's basically two huge plane hangars, and they've got one hangar is full of airplanes and the other is full of space stuff. And it's fairly new and really well designed and beautiful stuff. And to me, I'm not that interested at air and space other than, you know, isn't it cool that we can fly? Isn't it cool we can go to space? But you are the man is very, very interested in all that stuff, particularly space. But it was cool just visually. There was so much that was really interesting. So I had a fun time. I took pictures, not so much to document, it's just to be artsy-fartsy. But what was cool was the Challenger. No, not the Challenger. Is it the Discovery? It's a space shuttle. And I feel like the Challenger is the one that blew up. So this must have been the Discovery. But they had it. And it looks quilted. Maybe I'll find. I took tons of pictures, and the man took tons of pictures because I was like, I want to make a Discovery quilt. But I'll try to show you. But it looks really cool. And of course, seeing all these art quilts at the Sacred Threads exhibit. By the way, if you ever get a chance, so the next one will be 2017. Although maybe this one is traveling. If I think of it, I'll look it up. But it's incredible. It's so worth your time to see. But anyway, so yes, yeah, seeing lots of art quilts, and I don't think I'm going to become an art quilter, but I found the textures, the lines of the space shuttle super cool. So I'm like, oh, I'd like to do that. I'd like to try that. Primarily for the quilting. You know, I think the piecing would be pretty simple, but the quilting would be fun. Anyway, so that is where I think you are up to date with me. I will try to get back on saddle. I probably will not post an episode next week because I'm going to be teaching and be tired once I'm done teaching. My introverted self will probably not be in the podcasting mood. But I'm looking forward to the workshop. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm also looking forward to being done because that's kind of it for the summer. We'll go see my parents in Kentucky in mid-August for a few days. But other than that, it's just kind of being here, trying to put some order back into my garden. The garden's been great. It's been very productive. It is such a mess because we have not been good about weeding. So we're getting lots of good stuff. But yeah, it's I don't know. It's been a good summer so far. You know, I do fall into my summer funk. And I think when we got back from vacation, I get these tension headaches, and they often last 3 days. And when we got back from vacation, I got one of those, and then that was followed by getting some sort of minor bug, just feeling like I had almost head strep, not that bad, but kind of wiped out, a little stuffy. I always get these, so maybe allergies, I don't know, but that happens every summer. So then I was kind of feeling funky, but now I feel a lot better, and I feel motivated. This decluttering project has been great. The Quilt Alliance conference is just inspiring to me, and I'm looking forward to getting back into a writing routine, but that really may not happen until the boys go back to school. I have done some writing this summer, but not a lot, and I don't know why I think I will write in the summer, because it just doesn't work. Even though the boys are older and a lot more independent, it just doesn't work. I end up doing a lot of driving around and dropping off and picking up and etc. That's fine. A few more years of that, and then they'll be on their way into the world. So lots of time, lots of things to there will be summers when I can write to my heart's content. But right now, doing some other things, enjoying them. I hope you are enjoying your summer. Thanks again to the people who have inquired as to my whereabouts very kindly and in a concerned way. I am here. I am good. And I hope you will be hearing a little bit more from me a little more frequently in the coming weeks. So I hope you are having a good quilty summer. Let me hear about it. You know, I realize, because this is kind of a one-off instead of quilt diaries, that I did not say thanks for all the comments on the last episode. So let me thank you for all the comments, just not just for what I say, but also all the really generous comments about Ellen's guest blog post about her trip to Paducah. If you haven't read that, I would recommend it. It's quite wonderful, and a lot of and Ellen, I think you've been on there and have read the comments. I want to thank you again for doing that. Anyone, you know, if you go do something really interesting and want to share it, let me know and want to do a blog post. I loved having a guest poster and would love to do it again. So let me know. In the meantime, remember, life is short, so quilt first. I'll see you next time. Oh, you know what? I realized I forgot to say the date. It's Monday, July 20th. In case you want, 2015, in case you want to know where we are in space and time, that's where we are, out here with the cicadas and the birds. All right, talk to you soon. Bye.